Runsmith Enterprises presents episode 8 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is June 15th, 2017. It's a Thursday. We have a little bit of a different show today. I'm skipping the music and some of the other segments of the show to get right into today's show. A little bit on me, though. You can find my website at runsmith.net. That's runsmith.net. You can find email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter on there. Last time I did mention my Twitter handle, and I said it was Runsmith. It's actually Runsmith E for Runsmith Enterprises. So Runsmith E is one of my two Twitter accounts. I might have just said Instagram. I meant Twitter. So I have two Twitter accounts. One is Runsmith E, and the other is ChemSmith, like the beginning of the word chemistry, C-H-E-M, ChemSmith. Instagram, I'm TimCSmith1961. Email for the moment is still ChemSmith1@gmail.com. I might change that. Facebook, you can find me at Runsmith Enterprises. All this stuff you can find at runsmith.net. And you'll also find my coaching services there, so please check that out. And also, you can start donating to the show on Patreon if you like. It's just a site where you can donate, and you can easily see how that works. It's patreon.com/runsmith. So pretty easy to remember that. So patreon.com/runsmith. Please donate. That would be very, very, very much appreciated. So like I said, today's show is a little bit special, a little bit different. I'm not at my normal spot in Ohio, but I'm in California. So for those watching on YouTube, you'll notice a little different setup behind me. And yes, this podcast is also recorded as a video, and later I put it up on YouTube. It's usually a few days delay. The delay could be longer this time, but we'll see. And there's no difference between the podcast and the YouTube show. It's just I put the YouTube show up for people who don't do podcasts. So as I said, I'm in California, and my wife and I have been here for a few weeks already, and we have another about 10 days to go. And in the next podcast, I'll review a whole bunch of stuff that we did, all related, or most of it related to going out and checking out various trails in the area and stuff like that. So there will be a podcast about that. And then the podcast after that will be about my Western States 100-mile run, which is in 10 days or 9 days from now. 9 days from today is the race. And if you're listening for the first time today, I have been talking about this for quite a few episodes. So this is my big race coming up here, 100-mile race in California, in the mountains, the Western States 100-mile endurance run, and it's a very, 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 very famous, and I'll talk more about it probably on that show, but most of you have probably heard of it already and know quite a bit about it. So what I'm going to talk about today is neither one of those things directly, but the Western States 100-mile run training camp. So they do this over Memorial Day weekend. They have a training camp for people who want to run the race. And actually, it's for anyone. Anyone can do it. You don't have to be signed up for Western States 100-mile race to do this race. And anyone can do it. So that's what our show is going to be today. One little thing before that, I would like to give kudos to my coaching client, Chad, who got a marathon PR at the Fargo Marathon, I think by like 13 minutes, so quite a big chunk of time he took out of his previous PR. And on top of that, he's taking on an incredible challenge himself this summer. He's doing what's called the Leadville Series, I think that's what it's called. And this is what he's going to be doing in the next couple of months. So he's doing the Leadville Marathon. I think it's the Leadville Marathon this weekend, as in 2 days from today. He'll be doing a marathon up in Colorado. Then in the next couple of months, he will also do a 50-mile run there. a 100-mile bike in Leadville. 100-mile bike. The day after the 100-mile bike, he will do a 10K run, which doesn't sound like much. But a week after that, the 100-mile Leadville run. So in like 8 days, he'll do a 100-mile Leadville bike, 10K run, 100-mile run. That's following this marathon and this 50-mile run. So that's the Leadville series. On top of all that, believe it or not, in the middle of this, after this marathon this weekend, he's doing the Black Hills 100-mile race. So that's an incredible summer of running and biking that he is doing. So maybe at the end of all that, we should get him on the show and see how all that went. But that's quite a ambitious summer for him. So have fun, Chad, with all that. And have fun at the marathon this weekend. That's kicking it all off. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to today's topic. The Memorial Weekend Western States Training Camp. So the Memorial Weekend Western States Training Camp is a 3-day untimed event wherein runners cover the final 70 miles of the Western States 100-mile endurance run. So again, the run is 100 miles, but the training camp covers the last 70. Probably because the first 30 are still snow-covered, and they usually are snow-covered, or often are snow-covered, so you can pretty much count on being able to do the last 70 miles. And that still gives you a pretty good idea of what the course is going to be like. So the first day is through the famous canyons from Robinson Flat to Forest Hill, and it covers about 30 miles of the course. Day two is from Forest Hill to Rucky Chucky, which is to the famous river crossing. And that day covers about 20 miles. And day three is from the other side of that river at Rucky Chucky, from what's called Green Gate to the finish in Auburn, California. So that's also about 20 miles. So you do 30 miles, then 20, then 20 over the 3 days. They bus you to where you need to go. They do mark the course. They provide aid stations. There's not as many aid stations as on race day, but there are aid stations. And there is food at the end of each day. So you do not have to be signed up for the race to do this. Anyone can do this. You can also just sign up for 1 day. So there were some people just doing day one or day two or day one and day three. You can do it that way as well or something like that. So so for today, I just kind of want to give some information about the runs, kind of a guide to the training runs and how it all went for me. And hopefully this will be useful for anyone else thinking of doing it, or it might prompt you to want to do it yourself. All right, so here we go. Day one was Saturday, May 27th. And a little preface for this. My wife and I have reserved an Airbnb in the area. So originally I was going to maybe try to fly out to do the training runs and then fly back to Ohio and then come out to the race. But it turned out to be pretty much cheaper just to stay here. And luckily, my wife's a teacher, and I'm not really doing anything full-time right now, so we were able to take this whole month off and just do all this as one trip. So that's worked out very, very well for us to do this. So day one, like I said, Saturday, May 27th, I drove to Forest Hill Elementary School, which is mile 62 of the course. It's an aid station on the course, about mile 62. It's at elevation 3,300 feet. So there must have been about 200 of us there. I think we ended up filling about 4 school buses. So I got checked in. Check-in's very easy. You just get a wristband. You just give them your name and you get a wristband, and that proves that you're on it. You're not getting swag or anything for this. There's no shirts. There's no medals at the end or anything like this. No one's timing anything. This is just a training run. All 3 days was only $140, which is pretty darn good for 3 days of everything they do, all just the course marking and the aid stations and the busing. So I got checked in. You get your wristband. I kind of wandered around. I was looking for celebrities and instantly saw some. So I saw Casey Lichtig, who won the race last year. She's from Omaha, Nebraska. And she's fantastic runner, and she is pretty much the front runner for this year. No one's going to be surprised if she wins again this year or gets in at least in the top two or three if she has a good day. And I got my picture taken with her. So I was really geeking out during this whole thing, going around getting my picture taken with people. After I got my picture taken with her, and I talked with her a little bit too. Very, very nice lady. And then I got my picture taken with Jeff Browning, who got second last year, I think, and who has also done many 100-milers and won many of them and is a real tough runner, does races all around the world. Got my picture taken with Jamil Curry, who is also a very good runner, and on top of that is a race director down in, I think, Arizona, and does a lot of filming, so you might know his name from the Mountain Outpost little news segment he does on YouTube every week. You should watch that because it's very funny. And he does other filming projects, which are very good. And in fact, that's what he was doing here this weekend, was a filming project for the whole Western States training run. I also got my picture taken with Elof Olsen, who is a guy from Sweden who's coming over to do the race and who got in with a golden ticket, which means he won. There are a number of races you can win. If you win it or actually get top two, you get into Western States. So he won one of those, or maybe he got second. I can't remember. But he will be here, and he was probably hanging out with another Swedish guy named Jonas Budd, who is also very fast and who's a great mountain runner. But I did not know Jonas Budd was here at the time, and I didn't know what he looked like, so had I would have gotten my picture taken with Jonas Budd as well. And both Jonas Budd and Elof Olsen are great runners and certainly have a good chance at being in the top 10 for this race. Having said that, there's about 20 guys who could get into the top 10, so it's going to be a tough race. Craig Thornley, the Western States race director, was also the director of these training runs, and he gave a little talk just before we were about to leave and kind of an overview of what the day was going to be like. They also had prizes, so what he did was he just asked questions, like about the course, or maybe the history of the race, and if you answered correctly, you got some little prizes like shirts and stuff, but actually one prize was a pair of Altra shoes, which I would have loved to have won. Altra was here. Altra is the main sponsor of Western States, and they had a little tent every day with their shoes. And actually, you could even borrow a pair of shoes and run in them if you wanted to. So there was that. So after the little talk by Craig Thornley, we hopped on the buses and got going. So not a whole lot of fanfare to this. We get on the buses, and we were bused to Robinson Flat aid station, which is at mile 30 of the course. So that, again, Forest Hill was mile 62, and we got bused to mile 30 of the course. And Robinson Flats had about 6,700 feet, so it's up there quite a ways. However, the buses didn't make it. So as you probably have heard, there was a lot of snow this year in California, record-breaking snows and rains, which may end up changing the course, but we're not sure about that yet. But we were bused to Robinson Flat, but the buses could not make it until we hit snow. So the road just ended at a big pile of snow about 3.7 miles before Robinson Flat. So we got bonus miles because what we had to do was get off the bus and run on the snow to Robinson Flat, about 3.7 miles on road, but it was snow covered. Once we got to Robinson Flat, that's when we really hit the Western States course. And from there, it actually goes uphill. So we went uphill. I think we went up to about 6,900 feet. And then we started going down. So about the first 7 miles of our day were pretty much snow covered. I hiked most of it. I mean, much of it was uphill anyway, and I'd be hiking, but the snow did make it a little tough to run on. It was a little slippery and at times slanted, so you were kind of sliding down the side. So the first 7 miles were pretty slow because of the snow. I think normally at the training camp there would not be snow here, or maybe just patches of snow, but we had quite a bit. So after about 7 miles, during which we did, you know, going up quite a ways and started coming down. Then the snow finally was gone. The temperature, we thought it was going to be quite cold. A lot of people had jackets, and we thought it was going to be pretty cold up there, but it was not. It was like really nice. I kind of kept the jacket on for a little while, but not very long before I just took it off and tied it on to my my pack and didn't need it. It was really a beautiful day for running. So as we started downhill, we continued down to what's called Dusty Corners, that aid station, which is at 5,100 feet or mile 38 on race day. This was about mile 11 or 12 for us. So it should have only been about mile 8, but it was about mile 11 or 12 down at 5,100 feet. And while I was there at the aid station fueling up, I heard people saying, "Hey, way to go, Wally." And I turned around and I looked, and there was Wally Heseltine. And I recognized him because he is now a pretty famous guy. And he's the subject of a video documentary. It's not on YouTube. It's on Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. It's on that, and it's called 30 Hours. Spell out the 30, T-H-I-R-T-Y, 30 Hours. So look up this video, and it's about him. And I'll put a link to it also. So just go to runsmith.net, and there'll be a link to it. The video is about him trying to finish Western States last year at the age of 72. And I will not give out any more information. Go watch the video. It's really something. He is running it again this year. I guess he'll be 73 this year. And he is a very accomplished ultra runner. He's been running since something like 1981. And I will say he has done a race every single month since 1981. A race of some sort, if it's a 5K or whatever. Every single month since 1981, he's done a race. So he's done many 100-milers as well. He's done Western States a number of times as well, too. So go watch the video. So what was neat was after we left the aid station, I actually ran with him for like 15, 20 minutes, and we kind of chatted about the course, and I asked him about the part of the course we did not run, and you know, just kind of going over running and how much we enjoy it and stuff like that. So it was really, really cool to run with another celebrity. I did get a picture of him running as well, so that was really neat. Then we just kept going down, running down. This course is overall downhill. And then we started hitting the canyon. So these canyons are very famous or infamous. And the first canyon, you're at about 4,000 feet at an aid station called Last Chance. And you start heading down. And the very first, this first canyon here is the steepest and probably the longest. It's not the longest. It's only 0.7 miles. But you drop from 4,100 feet. I'm sorry, from 4,000 feet to 2,700 feet, 1,300-foot drop in 0.7 miles. You're basically going straight down, and it's pretty rocky on top of that. So that is quite a drop to do. Right when you get to the bottom of that to the swinging bridge, then you hike pretty much straight up to Devil's Thumb at 4,600 feet. That's even higher than where we were when we started. And that's Devil's Thumb is... I said this wrong. So when you go back up, you go back up to about 4,100 feet. So we started at 4,000 feet, went down to 2,700, then back up to 4,100. And the hike up is about a mile. And you go up 1,400 feet in 1 mile. That takes you up. After that, you still keep going up to Devil's Thumb at about 4,600 feet. So you do end up going from 2,700 feet up to 4,600 feet. Devil's Thumb is about mile 48 on the course. I found this particular downhill to be the worst of all 3 days that we did. But I'll talk more about that later. It took me roughly 43 minutes, I think, to climb up this hill. So quite a long hill, and you're up on tippy toes. It is very, very steep. So a lot of times you're on your toes, your hands on your knees, just pushing to get up this thing. Once you get to the top of Devil's Thumb, you basically repeat this again. You go down to another canyon. This time you go down to a low point of 1,750 feet at El Dorado Creek. So again, you go down and then you go right back up again, this time to Michigan Bluff. And that's at only about 3,300 feet. So you don't go up quite as much. And this one took me about 54 minutes just because it's more mileage to do for this hill. So these two big canyons. As is typical with me, on the way down, these steep downhills with rocks, people were just passing me, just running by me like I'm standing still. I was even walking a lot of it because it's just too steep to run. I would lose control and trip, but a lot of people are really, really good at it. Most people are better at it than I am. On the way up, though, if anything, I pass more people than passed me. So I do better on the way up than I do the way down. I don't really go fast, but I guess I'm just pretty steady going up. And I know some people just stop. You know, I'm walking and there's people just stop, not moving at all. So I just keep going up and up and up. And so I do a little bit better going up. So when we were done with these two canyons, we're at Michigan Bluff, which is mile 56 of the race. And there was an aid station there. And Michigan Bluff is actually a little tiny community right there. So again, a little review of what just happened from mile 48 to 56. In just 8 miles, you go through two massive canyons. Straight down, straight up, straight down, pretty much straight up to Michigan Bluff. And these canyons on race day are notorious for the heat, and I can see why. As you're down in them, there's no wind at all, completely dead air. So I think the heat just settles down in these canyons, and it's pretty much always going to be over 100 degrees in these canyons, and a lot of people really, really suffer. And as I said, it's miles 48 to 56, so you're halfway done. You're often hitting these canyons on top of the fact they're the hottest part of the race. You're hitting them at the hottest time of the day. Often it's late afternoon for a lot of people when you're hitting these canyons. You're starting to really, really feel the effects of running for a long time. You've been out there for, depending on who you are, 10 to 15 hours or so. You've been out there running, and you're going straight down in these canyons and straight up, so you're using an incredible amount of energy. So these canyons are a place where a lot of people struggle and probably end up dropping out of the race at some point during or right after these canyons. So it was really, really good to do them. And by the time I got to Michigan Bluff, I was pretty much toast. I was almost completely wiped out. We only had about 6 more miles to go to run to Forest Hill, and that wasn't too bad. It's all hills, but it was nothing like the canyon. So it's just uphill, up and down, and up and down. So we got to Forest Hill, which was about 3,200 feet, which is where we began the day. That's where we got on the buses. So that's mile 62 of the race. So again, those last 6 miles, I was really struggling. And even the last mile is almost completely flat, and I wasn't even able to run all of that. I was walking some of it. So it was a really, really tough day. And again, for me, it was more the downhills that beat me up. So the total for the day, 33.5 miles. That includes about 3.5 extra miles that we did. Should have been about 30. Took me 8 hours and 45 minutes. My pace was 15:40 per mile. I didn't find the day all that hot. It wasn't as hot as it's going to be on race day. Other runners were commenting about the heat. So I'm going to take this as a positive sign that the heat so far is not affecting me as it does some people. Having said that, in the past, I do struggle with heat. Specifically, normally in the summer, I do triathlons in the Midwest, and the heat there can really get to me. It's a lot more humid in the Midwest. So maybe it's the humidity that bothers me more than the heat, because the heat here, of course, is drier. So that was my day. At the end of it, there was a bunch of grilled cheese sandwiches. I ate a bunch of grilled cheese sandwiches. They're very tasty. And I got another picture at the Ultra Tent. Zach Bitter was working. Zach Bitter is another famous ultra runner. He's very fast. He does things like run for 24 hours on a track and sets records doing stuff like that. I think he holds the American record for running 100 miles now, and he like on a track. I mean, it's the overall record, I believe, but he ran 100 miles in under 12 hours. So I believe that is the American record. So he's an ultra representative, and he was working there, and I chatted with him a bit, very nice guy, and got my picture taken with him. Relaxed a little bit, and I did get an interview with someone, and we will listen to that right now. Okay, I am with Mark Phil of Indianapolis, is that right?
That's correct.
Very good. So is this your first time doing the training runs?
It's my first time, yes, sir.
What race did you qualify for this with?
I had multiple qualifiers. I think I used Mohican 100 as my qualifying race, though.
Okay, that's one of two 100s I've actually done with me.
Okay.
So how many times, how many years in a row did you have
this? My fifth year in the lottery.
Holy moly. So,
so 16 tickets.
You deserve to be in.
Yeah, it was a long time coming.
I guess so. Just generally, how did today go?
It went about as good as I could have hoped. I would say, you know, it took a little longer to run it than I planned, but I also took some time to take pictures along the way,
right,
at the various, you know, famous checkpoints, and overheated a few times, so I took some time to cool off in the creeks, but overall I'm pleased with how it went.
So you said the uphills were more of an issue that for you than the downhills?
Yeah, I think more so just from, again, the overheating perspective. I didn't have enough cool water to cool off with on the way up, so I think a little better aid station strategy might have fixed that problem. And with more aid stations on race day, I think it shouldn't be an issue.
Right. So living in near Indianapolis, how did you do anything particularly special to train for this or to train for the hills?
Yeah, for the uphills, I do a lot of incline work on the treadmill. So I'll put it at max incline, I'll put a weight vest on, and I'll just sit there and hike for an hour. For the downhills, that's been a bit more challenging. But I've been doing like things like squats, lunges, etc. Some more strength work to prepare for the downhills.
Right. So are you doing the next 2 days?
I am. I'm doing all the days, yeah.
So how are your quads right now?
I'll have to let you know in the morning. Right now they feel okay. I'm thinking I'm going to be pretty sore when I wake up because I hit the downhills pretty hard. So I think I'm going to pay for it tomorrow. But that was the plan going in. I wanted to really trash them today.
Right.
It's my last hard, you know, quad trashing workout. So, yeah. So if all goes according to plan, they will be pretty sore tomorrow.
Yeah. So see, what shoes did you wear? It looks like you have
Ultra Lone Peak. Yeah.
Okay, I have the Olympus, the new Olympus.
Okay.
So do those work pretty well?
I love them. Yeah.
What about your socks?
I use Features.
Oh yeah, are they good?
I love them. Yeah, very comfortable.
And how about like hydration vest or whatever?
I got the Ultimate Direction, the Anton Krupicka 2.0, I think.
And that worked pretty well?
Yeah, it's very comfortable. You hardly even notice it's there.
Very good. So do you have any type of strategy or any plan or goals for Western States itself?
Yeah, just to make sure I come home with a buckle of some kind.
Just try to finish.
Just to finish, honestly. And if the gods are smiling that day and if a sub-24 looks like it's in the cards, that's great. But I'm just as happy coming home with the bronze one.
Right. Other than Mohican, what are some of the other hundreds that you have completed?
I've done Mohican. I've done Kettle Moraine a couple times. Indiana Trail 100 a couple times. I've done Tunnel Hill a couple times. I've done Leadville. I think that might be about it.
Leadville, that's pretty cool.
So yeah, Leadville is cool, yeah.
That's probably the closest thing to this, right?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, that's good. At least you've got some mountain.
Mountain race, higher elevation.
Right.
Gets up around 12, 13,000 feet. So that was something I couldn't train for back in Indiana. So,
do you have any other friends here that are doing training runs or the?
One of them just
Western
walked off. Brent Caldwell and Mark Kavorsky, and then Bill Feller. So yeah, three other guys that came out here with me.
Oh, very nice. I think that's about it. So
all right,
anyway,
cool.
Thanks a lot, and good luck with the next couple of days in Western States.
All right, thanks, Tim.
Right.
Appreciate it. Likewise.
Thanks. Okay, so there you go. Thank you to Mark Phil for talking to me. And one comment you noticed, Mark said something about his plan was to trash the legs. So this is a general strategy when it comes to races with significant downhill, and that's what Western States is, just a huge amount of downhill. So I suppose you could just, you know, practice generally running downhill a lot, which of course we all try to do. But another idea is to purposely pick a day and just destroy your quads. Just run downhill a ridiculous amount and just really destroy them. And the idea is they will really bounce back from that and really strengthen up. I'm not sure it's proven that that is particularly a great strategy versus just generally, you know, weekly getting in a decent amount of downhill running. But it is something a lot of people do, and I have as well. So I had a number of training runs where I really purposely tried to go downhill quite a bit. And I also thought the same thing with the first day was I really want to, you know, I know my quads are going to be really trash from going downhill because the downhill just really beats up the quads. So I knew that was going to happen. So by default, I had the same strategy he did. You kind of can't help it because that first day is just going to do that. So anyway, we'll see how that goes for Mark and I. All right, so that night when I got home, I did stick my legs a little bit. You know, I got the little stick and rubbed the soreness out of the quads as best I could and try to get some good sleep and some decent nutrition. Probably went to Chipotle after the run. I can't remember, but that's my go-to place. So, and just try to get as much sleep as I can because day two was coming. So that was the next day, Sunday, May 28th. This time my wife went with me. She had stayed home the first day, but she went with me the second day. So she wasn't just stuck alone here at the Airbnb all day. So we drove to Forest Hill again, very early in the morning. Same place we went the first day. But this day we were going to start running from Forest Hill. So we wouldn't be getting bused until we came back. So the first day we got bused to the start. The second day we'll get bused from the finish back to Forest Hill. So the day started off just the same as the first day. We got our little wristband, and Craig Thornley, the race director, gave another little talk, and there were more prizes with another pair of shoes that I did not get. And the second day was going to be about 20 miles on what's called the Cal Street section. I never understood what that meant, the Cal Street section, but I found out. And I was a little bit nervous about how the legs would respond because as I stood there, I had very, very stiff and sore legs. But they did manage to respond. So what the Cal Street section means is that you run down the street from the Forest Hill Elementary School for a few blocks. You take a left on Cal Street. You're on Cal Street for maybe two blocks. That's it. So the whole section, they call it the Cal Street section, but you're on Cal Street for like two blocks. At the end of two blocks, it just dead ends and you're back on trail. So it begins with a pretty significant downhill again. We will never have a downhill and uphill like we did on the first day. But we still have some, I mean, if they were standalone, you would say, wow, that was a good downhill and a good uphill. You know, you would still think it was a lot, but now it becomes relative, right? So relative to day one, nothing we do from now on in day two or day three seems as bad, to me anyway. So we did do a pretty good downhill, and this took us to an aid station. I think it's what's called the Peach Stone aid station. This is mile 71 on the course. And at this aid station, Tim Tweetmeyer was working, another celebrity runner. So Tim Tweetmeyer is one of the absolute legends of Western States. He's done it something like 25 times, literally, and has gotten under 24 hours most of those times, or all of them, or something ridiculous like this. He's won it about five times, so he's a super legend. And I'll actually post a video later where he kind of introduces the video. He was actually working at the aid station pouring water for people, so that was great. I got my picture taken with him. On top of that, he had his one of his trophies there at the aid station, which is a big cougar trophy. And so I got the Touches trophy, which was really cool, and get my picture with him. So that was great. As far as the aid stations go, by the way, there was nothing spectacular about them. They were supplied with the regular stuff. They had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, my favorite. Things like M&Ms and nuts and chips and Fritos and stuff like that. Water, of course. And they had this Cliff electrolyte drink, which isn't really calorie intensive. It's only like 40 calories per bottle, but I guess it has electrolytes. So it tasted fine, so I would get some of that. I'm sure on race day, some of the aid stations will have much fancier things, maybe hot foods and soups or something like that. I'm not too particular about what's at aid stations, especially if they have peanut butter and jellies, then I'm pretty darn happy. So after the Peachstone aid station, we did another pretty good drop here, about 1,000 feet in a mile. So that's still pretty significant. To me, it didn't seem as bad as anything in the canyons, but that's still a pretty good drop. At this point, we were down to about 1,000 feet of elevation. We're almost down to sea level here at 1,000 feet compared to where we started day one. After this, we rolled up and down, kind of just rolling hills, to the famous river crossing at mile 78 of the course. And this is only at 5,500 feet. So overall, we're still going down. This aid station is the Rucky Chucky aid station. And it's right next to the river. This is the river we're going to end up having to cross on race day. At this aid station, there, Stephanie Howe Violet was working. She is also a superstar runner. She won Western States, I want to say 3 years ago. At least I believe she did. 99% sure she did. And she's won a lot of other races as well. And she was working there, and I got my picture taken with her. And I'm pretty sure she's running it again this year. So I guess she wasn't doing the training runs. She was working the aid station. But I'm pretty sure she's running again. So at this aid station, again, this is the river crossing on race day at mile 78 at this aid station. This is the American River, and you have to cross it. And usually you have to walk over it, holding on to the string of rope, and you hold on to it. And the water can be chest high, can be very, very high. However, this year, again, because of so much snow and rain, we're probably going to be using boats to get across. I don't think they're going to allow anyone to walk across it because the water would be literally over our heads. So they have had to do this before half a dozen times or so, and it looks like that's what's going to happen again this year. But I guess we could find out, you know, in the next 9 days that they are going to let us walk across it. But I think we're going to be doing the boats. But we did not do that because we stopped right here on day two, but we were not yet done. We had to go up to where the buses were, and this happened to be a 2 mile hike, pretty much straight up. So even though we were really done running the course, we got the bonus 2 miles up this dirt road to where all the food and stuff was. The end of the day food was here, and I had this double cheeseburger that was absolutely amazing. It was so, so delicious. It was right off the grill, and it was very good. So I sat and chilled out there for a little bit. Then we hopped on a bus and got bus back to Forest Hill, and that was the end of that day. So day two was only 18.2 miles, so 16 miles shorter than day one, or 15 miles shorter than day one. 18.2 miles took me about 4 hours and 35 minutes. My pace was 15:08, which was faster than day one, but significantly shorter and significantly easier. Again, on day two, I found the downhills to be much easier than the uphills, and I found them to be easier than day one. This is really odd to me, though. Most people I talk to felt the downhills on day two were harder than the downhills on day one. So I'm a little confused because on paper, the downhills on day one look worse, and they felt worse to me. They were steeper and rocky. It seems like other people were saying the day two downhills were maybe more technical, maybe more rocky. I didn't notice them being anything worse, and they weren't as long and they weren't as steep. So I'm in the minority because most people thought the downhills from Forest View to Rucky Chucky were as difficult or more difficult than the canyons. So just goes to show everyone has different perceptions of things, I guess. So let's see, anything else on day two? That was about it. It was warmer than day one. I still did not have any problems with the heat. Sure, I was sweating and stuff, but I didn't find it an issue. One pleasant surprise was I found the course to be much more shaded than I thought it was going to be. I thought the whole course was just exposed, but we were quite a bit running through forests and trees and stuff like that. So, you know, like most of the uphills, or some of them anyway, you would be in the shade. So it's not a big problem. Sometimes if you're going uphill on a road, that was not shaded. But usually you're on a trail and it's pretty well shaded. So I think that helps as far as the heat goes. And again, it's a dry heat. So again, after day two, Deb picked me up, was there for me. And I probably went to Chipotle again. I don't know. But we went and ate. And I felt pretty much the same as I did after day one. Very stiff and very sore. But luckily, nothing was broken. My knees were okay. And my ankles were sore, but okay. So it wasn't a big problem. The course itself, even though we had all this snow and all this rain and stuff, the course is still pretty dry. In fact, dust was an issue on a lot of the course. So it was pretty dry most of the time. There wasn't much in the way of mud or anything like that. There was creeks to go through. Sometimes you could skip over them, but sometimes I didn't anyway and purposely just walked right through them to cool off. That was the heat was not real a problem for me. That evening in Auburn, there was a Trails in Motion film festival. So Sunday evening, we went to that. And that's just one of these film festivals that travel around and they show running films. So it's a little organization. They might be based out of Seattle. I'm not sure. But you can look it up, Trails in Motion Film Festival. And it might be coming in your town. And they show running-related little documentaries, short movies. Some are 5 minutes long. Some might be 45 minutes long. And it'll last for a few hours. And they're pretty fun to go to because they're pretty inspirational films. And there I saw another celebrity, Chris Mako. Chris Mako's a newer superstar, kind of jumped into the everyone just started noticing him last year. He got, I think, 7th at Western States and has been tearing up the trails this year. So he's won again. That should be a top 10 finisher if he has a good day. But that was kind of neat to see him there. We did actually leave a little bit early because I was tired and wanted to get to sleep. So we didn't watch all the films there, but we did do that. So that leaves us finally to day three, which is Monday, May 29th. So again, repeat this, Deb and I drove, but this time we didn't drive to the mile 62 at Forest Hill, but we drove right to the finish, which is the high school track in Auburn. That's where you finish. So we drove there and this time got bussed again to where we were going to start our run. So again, the same thing, get your wristband. Craig Thornley gives a talk. Try to win some shoes, which I did not win again. And I got three more pictures. I finally got a picture with race director Craig Thornley, also with Magda Boulay, who won the Western States 2 years ago, and she'll be back again. And she could win it if she has a good day. And another one, Claire Gallagher, who won the Leadville 100, which I recently just mentioned with my client who's going to be doing that. She won it last year. So she's another new speedster. And if she has a good day, she'll be top 10. So I got my picture taken with them. And we got bussed to the other side of the river from where we finished yesterday. So at the American River yesterday, we finished on the near side. We got bussed to the far side. So we never had to cross the river during the training run, which was pretty wise how they did this. What's interesting is I sat down on the bus and a guy sits down next to me, turns out to be Ian Sharman, who is another absolute superstar. And he has a list of accomplishments too long to really get into. Multiple 100 mile winner, has run Western States something like 6 or 7 times and placed in the top 10 every single time, has won Leadville more than once, holds what's called the Grand Slam record, which is 400-mile races done in one summer. His total time for that, he holds the record. I think it's Western States, Leadville, Vermont, and Wasatch. Maybe that's how you say it. I think it's those 400-mile races. So he has a record for the least amount of time on those. He does things like runs marathons and Spider-Man and Superman costumes and holds records for doing that. So I sat next to him and we talked for like a half hour on the bus ride. It was great. So we talked about all types of things. We talked about the course, and he too was telling me about how technical parts of the course was. Other front runners in the race, and he's the one that gave me the tip about Jonas Budd being here and said to keep an eye on him. We talked about what shoes we were going to wear and stuff like that. So it was really, really fantastic. He's also a running coach, and he's on a lot of podcasts. People interview him a lot. So Ian Sharman, look for him on podcasts. Very good speaker on podcasts. So that was very cool to sit with him. So this day, like I said, we got bused to the other side of the river, but not really. We couldn't get bused to the river. We got bused 2 miles before the river and had to begin by running down a road to the Western States course on the other side of the river. So that actually was a pretty good downhill. It was about a 1,000-foot drop over a couple of miles. So we began the day just like we did day two, coming out of Forest Hill. We started by going downhill. We began this day by going downhill. So I have these sore quads from going downhill, and then we just start by going downhill again. So we ran about 2 miles down on a dirt road to the Green Gate aid station, which again is somewhat on the other side of the river. And then we took off on the Western States Trail, and we ran it to the end of the race. So we were about mile 80 on the course when we began. We're at about 1,300 feet of elevation when we began the day. And there were, again, a couple of big down and ups. Nothing like day one, but a couple of big down and ups during the day. I think there were a couple of aid stations. The first one was at Brown's Bar, which is about mile 90 on the race course. And the second one was at No Hands Bridge. So No Hands Bridge is significant. It's a really cool place to see. I'll talk about that in the next podcast because my wife and I did a hike around there. It's a cool place to see. It's mile 96.5 of the race course. So if you've made it to No Hands Bridge and you've got time left, you can be pretty sure you're finally going to make it to the race. That's probably the first time I will know if I'm going to finish or not. Maybe. If there's only an hour left, then I still won't know because I'll have to run like crazy for another 3.7 miles. But if you've got 2 hours left and you're there, you're probably going to finish. So again, it's mile 96.5, and there was an aid station there, and there will be race day. And to get into it, we had to do another drop, kind of our last drop, definitely our last drop. It's about a 1,000-mile drop over 2 miles, dropping into No Hands Bridge. This, I believe, is the lowest point of the whole race. You're at 500 feet of elevation. And then actually, believe it or not, you finish the race by going uphill. So you go about 800 feet up this. It's a path, but it's a wide path for a while. You go up about 800 feet over 2 miles, kind of finishes with some steep switchbacks, the very last part there to get to. And then you're on road. You're in the city of Auburn on road, and you hit a sign that says, the city actually put up a sign that says, you're at mile 99 of the Western States race course, kind of like it's a famous spot, I guess. And then you just run on city streets to the finish, which is generally flat, but a couple little tiny uphills you would not notice normally, but I'm sure they're going to hurt if I get there. So then you run about a mile to the track, and on the track, you have to run 3/4 of a mile on the track on race day, and you finish on the track. We finish right before the track. I'm literally right at the track, but just right before it. So that's where we finished the day. So day three, again, you start at the river. You got a couple of big downhills and uphills. Again, nothing like day one. You drop into No Hands Bridge at 96.5. You hike up to mile 99. You're in the city on the road, and you just run the roads to the finish. The day was 21.9 miles, a little longer than day two, but nothing like day one. Took me 5 hours and 19 minutes, and my pace was 14:36, even faster than day two. So I did get faster every day, which is great. But of course, the flip side of that is each day was easier than the day before. But the flip side of that is I was doing each day with all these miles already on my legs. So you could argue that, sure, it was getting easier, but I was getting more and more sore all the time. So it is good. It does give me a little confidence that I was speeding up each day. And of course, that's the course itself, what that means is the course actually tends to get easier and easier and easier, at least after the first 30 miles. So I'll get into that momentarily. But from Robinson Flat on, the course just keeps getting easier and easier and easier. So you go through those horrible canyons. By horrible, I mean awesome canyons. Then day two, you do the downhills and uphills. These are where other people say it's worse than day one. I disagreed. To me, it just keeps getting easier and easier and easier. Never is it easy, but easier as you go. So I do feel, you know, that gives a little confidence, and it was neat that I was able to speed up. Now, on race day, I'm not going to be speeding up because I'm doing all of this on one day. The third day, day three, was the warmest day. It was in the 80s, and I still felt okay. And I know some people were hurting from the heat, but it didn't really bother me. Now, on race day, it's going to be significantly warmer. We have a huge warm front coming in, heat front, hot front, very hot. It's going to be in this region. It's going to be in the hundreds most of next week. It's going to be really, really nasty. The only good thing is I notice about 2 days before the race, it's dropping a little bit, maybe into the mid-90s, which is going to be about a 10-degree drop, which is better than nothing. So it's going to be hotter on race day than what we did in the training camp, but maybe not as bad as it could be. If the race was in about 5 days, it would be pretty unbelievably hot. But in 9 days, I'm hoping the forecast holds and it's going to be a little bit better. But again, I'm hoping the heat's not going to be a big issue that because it's a dry heat. I mean, it will be an issue, absolutely. I'm hoping it's a less of an issue for me than for others. Let's see. That's about all I have about day three. I got another interview, so let me play that, and then I'll give Sana some more thoughts on the training camp. So here's an interview with someone who I was running with all 3 days. I just seemed to be with these people, so I thought I should interview them because we're right about the same speed. And we'll do that right now. Okay, I am with a couple of people who did all 3 days, and it seemed we were always near each other all 3 days. So well, what are your names? And I think you're both from Boston, right?
Right.
Is that right? So what are your names?
Dima Feinhaus.
And Karen Ringheiser.
And what do you guys do? Anything interesting for a living?
I do software.
Software. What about you?
I do accounting for college in Boston.
Oh, very nice. Okay, so we did all 3 days, and if I'm correct, you're going to be in Western States.
Yes.
So you came out here to train for Western States. So,
yes.
In general, for both of you, how did the 3 days go? We'll start with you.
I think it was invaluable just being able to see the course firsthand. You see the YouTube videos and all the information that's out there, an enormous amount of information. And I've talked to so many people who have done it in past years. But to actually see it from my own eyes and to be on the course and run it is invaluable.
What do you think you most needed to work on? What was the hardest for you, uphills, downhills, or anything else?
Heat? I think the heat acclimation was definitely a big factor. Even though it was not an extremely hot weekend this weekend,
right.
It made me think about heat training in more severe terms than what I'm already doing.
Yeah. So how are your legs feeling now? Pretty painful?
Yeah. It's funny, though. You start getting into it, and kind of the pain subsides. It's not as painful as one would think.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because each day I thought maybe I'm not going to be able to run, and yet you managed to run again.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, so you were here in a supporting role, right?
Right, I will pace and crew Karen.
Very nice. So, Karen, what race did you use to qualify to get in here?
Well, I believe I put my name in 5 times, and I did Bayer 100 once in 2015, and then I did 5 Vermont hundreds.
So which, between Bear and Vermont, which is the hardest race?
Definitely Bear, and definitely Bear had a lot of heat. Yeah. And a lot more elevation.
Right. So I'm thinking if you can do Bear, you can do Western States.
I'm hoping so.
That's what you're hoping, right? Now you have done some 100s, but you told me you've also moved on to 200s. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how many hundreds I ran. I think last count is about 13 or 14. And I did 6 races, 300 kilometers up to 200 miles.
And which ones have you done? You said Tour de Jeanne, right?
Yeah, I finished Tour de Jeanne 3 times, and I finished PTL three times. PTL is a non-competitive sister race of UTMB, which is about 300 kilometers.
Ah, very nice. So, other than the obvious, it's longer. Can you describe what's different between a 200-miler and a 100-miler?
You know, there are two basic differences. One is sleep, because you have to manage sleep starting the first night. If you get into deficit with sleep, it's even worse than deficit with muscle fatigue and stuff.
Right.
And so people who try not to sleep first and second night pay for that dearly. And the second thing, like imagine you're finishing 100 times and majority of people at that point are totally spent and barely can do anything beyond that. If you run 200 miles at the point when you're at 100 miles, you should be more or less close to physical state and capacity how you started your 100-mile race, because you have another 100 miles to go. Even though you're going slower, your capacity to absorb elevation and miles should be still there.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Very interesting. Shoes. What shoes did you guys wear?
I wore Innovates Ultras, they called. For all 3 days, I was switching out. I had two pairs, so I wore them of the same model.
And they worked well?
They worked really well.
What about you?
I ran in Hoka's all 3 days. First and third day, I ran in road Hoka's and Speed Goats the second day. Funny enough, even though it was a random choice, I think we needed the thread on the shoes the most on the second day out of three.
Yeah. How about socks? What do you guys wear for socks?
I was wearing right socks, the double layer ones.
Right. Those work
for
well.
All 3 days.
Your feet look good. I'm looking at your feet.
Yeah.
Everything is relative
yeah,
here.
Yeah, everything's relative.
Have either of you guys done the Boston Marathon? You're from Boston?
Yeah, 16 times.
16?
Yeah, 16.
Holy moly.
Only
That's
12
amazing.
For me.
Only 12. Well, I've done it once, so you guys are a little bit ahead of me. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's kind of our, when Boston Marathon is done in mid-April, it means we can finally get off the freaking asphalt and get into the woods.
What are some other great races in your neck of the country that people should come do? You must like Vermont. That's kind of up your way.
It is. It is. Yeah, Vermont's a great race. We have like some little kind of backyard races in New Hampshire that are really rugged. One we did about 3 weeks ago called Wapak and Back, and it's a great race. They have a 21-mile option, which I did, and he did a 50-mile option. And he did an out and back with a little extra, and I did one way. And they bus you to the start for the one way, and then you run, and it's all over how many peaks?
Like eight or something.
About eight
very
mountains.
Gnarly.
Very,
about
very
eight
gnarly.
Mountains up
about
and down.
Mountains, up and down.
Down.
Some ski mountains and whatnot, used for ski mountains. And just a lot of roots, a lot of rocks, a lot of heavy-duty, gnarly stuff. So I think that was really good training for coming out here and seeing how well-groomed everything was here, relatively speaking.
Actually, this was a little more technical than I thought it might be. I mean, some of it was... that. One patch today was fantastic,
yeah.
That long stretch. But the canyons were a little, the downhills were a little more technical than I was thinking they might be. So it was good to see those.
Yeah. Compared to what we have back east, we're used to
a
whole different level of gnarliness.
Yeah.
But it was good to see
what's
actually there.
Right. So do you have any particular goals for the Western States just to finish or anything else?
I don't know. You know, work on the heat, work on whatever I can from now until then, and just come in, you know, in good shape, as best shape as I can, and see what the day brings, see what I can do.
Right. Do you have any races after Western States you're thinking about or signed up for yet?
Just Vermont 100.
When is that, August or?
July, about July 15th or so.
So that doesn't give you a whole lot of turnaround there.
No, yeah.
So it'll be Western States, 2 weeks of taper or something,
yeah,
and then...
something like that.
Right. What about you? Do you have anything on the radar?
My next event, excluding 50-miler 2 weeks ago, which kind of doesn't count, the next big event is called Euphoria. It's in Andorra. It's in Pyrenees.
Wow.
About 145 miles long, about 66,000 feet altitude gain, unmarked with GPS, with a teammate.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you, too, for talking to me, and I'll be seeing you at Western States.
Yeah,
maybe I'll be seeing you as well.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thank you very
much. Likewise. Thank you.
Okay, there you go. First of all, best wishes to Karen and to Mark, who I interviewed, who are both doing Western States. Hopefully you guys will have a great day. I think Karen sounds really set up to finish, having done Bear, which is a very tough course, probably tougher than Western States. She's done that. Sounds like she's ready to go. Mark has done Leadville, so he's also done a course at high elevation in the mountains. So those two both have a great background for being able to finish this race. Very interesting talking to Dima, who did the 200-mile races. Pretty fantastic. So best wishes to him for his 200-miler coming up later. Also, I kind of went right over my head when Karen said she's put her – I think she implied that just like Mark, she's put her name in five times. So for 5 years, she's been trying to get into this race. So she deserves to get in the race just like Mark does. And as I've said before, I got in on one ticket, which makes me feel really guilty, but I'm taking it anyway because I'm not the only one getting in on one ticket. One other thing, you notice Dima said, if you caught it, that he wore road shoes on days 1 and 3. I'm amazed he wore road shoes on day 1. And he said he felt he needed the technical shoes more on day 2. So there's, again, more of that where I'm kind of against the majority. A lot of people said day 2, which is miles like 62 to 80 of the course, was more technical than day 1, which is miles 30 to 62. So again, I found the opposite, but it doesn't matter. I'll have technical shoes on all of that part. More of that coming in a moment. I'll talk about my shoes in a moment. So again, more about how technical the race is. A lot of people will find this course quite runnable and easy. I've had a lot of people comment about this as a runnable course. I found it pretty technical and tough on my ankles. Did a lot of ankle twisting, especially going down. Yes, it may not be as bad as out east, but as soon as it's a certain level of technical, then it's tough. Okay, so I don't need a whole lot of rocks for my feet to twist and for it to cause problems. I've talked about my ankles before. I just have these ankle issues. A lot of people have more problem going uphill than downhill. Like I said, I have more problem going downhill than uphill. A number of people have commented that the first 30 miles is actually the most technical part of the course. This kind of makes me frightened because if the first 30 miles is more technical than the next 30 miles, that's a little worrisome because I found those middle mile 30 to 60 to be pretty tough, and I can't imagine it's going to be worse the first 30 miles. But a few people said it. Wally Heseltine, who I was running with, suggested that. Ian Sharman suggested that. And I've got a couple other comments from people specifically saying they thought miles 30 to 70 were quite runnable, whereas before that was more technical. So I'm hoping I don't find that to be true. Or at least if the first 30 miles, if the worst part is in there, I'm hoping it's not too long. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, overall, I am pleased with the whole training camp. I did 73.6 miles. The total time was 18 hours, 39 minutes. My overall pace was 15:12 per minute. Now, that's a lot faster than I'll have to do Western States. I'll have to do Western States at an average pace of 17:58 per mile. Was I just saying per minute? I meant per mile. So about 18 minutes per mile. That's what you have to do Western States to finish the 100.2 miles in 30 hours. So I was running at 15:12 minutes per mile, so a lot faster. However, obviously, I only ran 70 miles instead of 100. And on race day, I don't get to go home and take 8 hour sleep breaks in the middle of the race. So, and it's going to be hotter. So race day is still going to be much more tough to try to keep that 18 minute per mile pace, but we'll see what happens. One thing I haven't mentioned yet, and there's just no way words can describe this, were the views that I saw. So many fantastic views. And that is another reason to do this, because on race day, I'm not going to be stopping a whole lot taking pictures. I got to keep moving. I actually might take some pictures the first 30 miles because I haven't seen that yet, but it's going to be pretty quick. It's going to be just pull out a camera, take a picture, and go. Whereas during the training camp, I stopped and I just, you know, looked around and took my time taking pictures. So that's one really nice reason to do the training camp. I mean, just beautiful views, some distant views of mountains. There was a famous fire in 2008 that actually canceled the race, and you can see evidence of that all over. I mean, you're running right through these trees. I put my hand on a tree at one spot, and that my hand was black from charcoal from the tree. It still seems that, yeah, like it just happened. And you just have these endless views of these burned trees, which isn't really very pretty, but it's interesting. You're running through forest. You're running through this one spot. There's a meadow on the last day, or maybe it's the second to last day. Beautiful meadow, just fantastic. You got a lot of beautiful up-close views of creeks. The river, you're often looking down on the river. Just fantastic. So that's another reason to do this, is just for all the beautiful views. I'm going to try to post a bunch of pictures on the website. I might be slower than normal getting them up there, but I will try. So please, you know, be checking the website, runsmith.net, for show notes and links to things and pictures. At one was all done, I felt halfway decent. At the end of day one, I was really hurting. My quads were hurting. But at the end of day three, I was just really, 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 really sore. My left knee, which has been bugging me for a while, yeah, still kind of bugging me, but not bad. My left ankle's really, really sore. And it still is. It's not going to stop being sore until I just take a month off or something. But I'm used to it being really sore, so it should be okay. Hopefully, won't cause a big problem during the race. I'm used to hitting it and screaming and then running a 10-step in horrible pain, and then it kind of goes away. So it happens a lot. I should note that, again, since the training camp up till today, it's been about a couple of weeks. We did a whole bunch of hiking and running in the Sierras. That's what my, or in the area and the Sierras. And that's what my next podcast will be about. But I'll just mention, I actually did a half marathon last weekend. Just on a whim, I signed up for it. It was south of Lake Tahoe in the Sierras. And it was a great training race because basically we went uphill all the way up to about 7,200 feet. We went uphill, which is really nice. So a lot of hiking uphill and then a big long downhill. So it was a really nice training race. It was fantastic. And I'll talk about that next time. I'm actually thinking about doing a one-mile road race this Sunday, which is held in the town I'm in, but it just sounds fun. There's a big bike race going on. I mean, they're going to just add in a one-mile road race, so I might go ahead and do that just to get a little last little bit of speed before the race. A few last things, and we'll be done. As far as race goals, well, obviously I have one race goal, and that's to finish in 30 hours. Some people will say, well, you should have multiple goals, right? A first, second, or third goal. Actually, I have that one goal, but I kind of have just endless goals as well. So one goal would be to make it to mile 30, because I haven't seen that part of the course, okay? If I make it to Robinson Flat at mile 30, I will be able to say I saw the whole Western States course, all right? That doesn't sound like a great goal. So another goal might be mile 50, so I can say, hey, I got halfway. Or another goal might be through the canyons. That's like mile 56. Another goal would be Forest Hill, that's mile 62. Another goal could be to the river, that's mile 78. Or even to No Hands Bridge, that's mile 96.5. What if I get there and I time out? Hey, that's still pretty darn good. I made it as long as I could go it, right? And I pretty much got the whole experience. So I have all those little goals up to just finishing the race in 30 hours. And in fact, if I finish the race and it's over 30 hours, I'll take that. You know, what if I finish in 30 hours and 10 minutes? Well, okay, that's worse than, I mean, that's better than not finishing, right? So I'll just take whatever I can get. My goal is to just try to smile and have fun and run the best I can and enjoy everything and look around at everything and enjoy the people and all that. That's, you know, really the main goal, and see how far I can go. I really need to make sure I take it easy on the downhills. I have a tendency sometimes to just get kind of frustrated and start trying to run hard downhill, and I think it kind of backfires. I'm better off just really taking it easy and slow. I will lose time going downhill, but I have this strength going uphill, which I think does help, and on the flats where I can gain some of that time back. So just need to take it easy on the downhills. Nutrition-wise, I think I'm okay. I'm generally don't have major nutrition issues. Take a lot of gels. I only take about one gel per hour. That's not, some people take more. I take about one gel per hour and supplement it with the aid station food and kind of eat whatever my stomach says to eat. I'm usually okay. So what about the shoes? You'll notice I'm always asking runners about their shoes. I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And part of that was because I wasn't sure for the longest time what shoes I was going to wear. And I could probably do a whole episode on shoes, trying to figure out what I like. And I have like 25 different pairs of shoes trying to figure this out. So I'm just going to give you the answer here, what I'm going to do. In the training camp, I wore a different pair of shoes each day. The first day, I wore Skechers Go Trail Ultra version 4 shoes. I know, Skechers. A lot of people are probably cannot believe that Skechers makes a good trail shoe. They make a fantastic trail shoe. I hope they keep making them. I hope they get popular enough, but I'm a little worried about that because Skechers is not really known for trail shoes. They are fantastic. And I wore those all of day one. I had no problem. On day two, I wore my Ultra Olympus 2.5s. They worked very well for day two. And on day three, I wore the Hoka Challenger 3. So the Skechers and the Ultra have more tread and more cushioning. Ultra has the most. The Hoka has not a whole lot of tread. You could almost use it as a road shoe. And a little bit less cushioning, although still a lot of cushioning. So here's my plan. On race day, I'm going to start with the Skechers and run the first 30 miles with them to Robinson Flat at mile 30. Then I'm going to switch into the Olympus and do 48 miles on them through the canyons and to the river. Again, the Olympus has the most cushioning, so I'll use those through those canyons through what I think is the hardest part of the race. And then after the river, you can put a drop bag right after the river, and I'll switch into the Hoka Challengers. They're also the lightest shoes. So right when my legs are feeling the heaviest at the end of the race, I'll put on my lightest shoes. They're not as technical, but I won't need anything as technical. The last 22 miles or so, it's not as bad. So I'll wear the Hoka Challengers. That's the plan. It's funny, I was kind of hinting to Ian Sharman about this, and he suggested, you really want to have one pair of shoes. You should plan to wear one pair of shoes the whole race and have other shoes as backups. And he's probably right, but I like this idea I have. I think it'll work out pretty well. I have never done this. I've always worn one pair of shoes through a whole race. I don't think I've ever changed shoes in a race, ever. But I do like this idea, and I think it'll work. I'll be wearing my Injinji toe socks, and I think I'll change them when I change the shoes, but I may have some more Injinjis in other drop bags as well, in case I want to. I'll have my Ultimate Direction vest, the Tim Olson vest, even though I still haven't figured out the water bottle thing. I mentioned this last time, if you want to listen to that. Haven't really figured it out, but I think the vest feels really good, and I think I'll be wearing that. It holds about a liter of water, and that should pretty much do it. During the canyons, when it's really hot, I might carry another half a liter of water on a waist belt. Just have a little extra, and if anything, I can pour it on the top of my head or something. But there's a lot of aid stations. There's 23 aid stations, and a lot of these are toward the second two-thirds of the course. So the trade aid stations come a lot, so should be okay with water because of that. So race day itself begins at Squaw Valley at an elevation of 6,200 feet. It begins with a 2,550-foot climb. So the first thing you do is you climb straight up to 8,750 feet at what's called Watson's Monument, and then you're at mile 4.5. So you just start by hiking up. And so you're at 8750 and you're going to end at Auburn at whatever that was, I forget, 3000 or something. So that's why it's an overall downhill course. You do 23,000 feet of downhill during the race and 18,000 feet of up. So that's the general layout of the course. Okay, so as far as the snow goes, everyone is wondering if they're going to alter the course because of the snow. They've had to do that about a half dozen times. The race director still has not said. We have 9 days to go. There's a lot of snow up there, but like I said, we've got a week in the 90s and 100s coming up, so there's going to be a lot of snow melting. My gut feeling, and the rumors are, I guess, he's going to keep pretty much the regular course, but with some modifications. I think we're going to be running around a few peaks instead of over a few peaks, but I won't know that until they announce it. So we'll find out what's going to happen with all the snow. In any case, it's almost a given we'll be running a bunch of miles on snow the first 30 miles. This could be really bad if it's really slippery or if it's deep. It could be a problem. And not so much that it, you know, will kill me, but it just slow me down. You know, if you have to slow down and hike where in places I would normally be running, that's a problem. You could argue it could be good. If there's a little snow in the technical sections, it could actually smooth them out and mean less rocks. The snow covers the rocks. It all comes down to the texture of the snow to some extent and how deep it is to whether it's a problem or not. I run a lot in snow, having grown up in the Midwest, or lived in the Midwest recently. So it really depends on how deep it is and if it's slippery or not, if it's making you slide sideways and all that stuff. So we will find out. On race day, Deb and my wife Deb and my daughter, who's on her way here, they will hopefully see me at a few places. Probably Robinson's Flat at mile 30, Michigan Bluff at mile 56, Forest Hill at mile 62, and at the finish. Those are the easiest places to get to, so hopefully I will see them at those places. Lastly, I think, I submitted an essay to Ultra Running Magazine about the training camp, and it's called Top 10 Reasons to Do the Western States Training Camp. I was going to read this whole thing because they actually tweeted it out and they put it on their Facebook, and it's been passed around quite a bit, so it's pretty cool that my little essay has gotten retweeted a bunch of times and reposted on Facebook a bunch of times. I think it has, which kind of made me think, is there such a thing as a service that tells you how much something has been tweeted? I've never heard of such a thing, or how many times something has been posted on Facebook. It'd be interesting to know, because I really have no idea if it's been tweeted 10 times or more or less or whatever. But it has been going around. You could probably just search it if you want. But I was going to read the whole thing, but we're over an hour. I'm not going to. So I'll put a link to it on the on my page. I might even copy the whole thing and put it on there. So it's called The Top 10 Reasons to Do the Western States Training Camp. So look for that on my website as well on runsmith.net. I'm also going to post a video that kind of covers the course. This is the one Tim Tweetmeyer is in. I'll post that. I will post a link to the video about Wally Heseltine and some other videos. I will mention that Jamil Curry, the guy who does a lot of makes a lot of videos, he did 3 days worth of videos about the training camp. I'll post links to those as well so you can see. And I'm in some of the videos even. If you look real close, you can see me in the videos. And so that's a pretty good overview of the training camp as well. So I will post those. A couple of quick thank yous. I want to thank Craig Thornley, the race director. He's answered a lot of questions for me. And some local people who have helped me out with talks, information about the race, or helping me find trails to run around here. So Ken Krause and Jack Meyer, thank you very much. You guys have given me a lot of good ideas of where to hike and run in the area. Tiana Rockwell also gave me a few ideas. Thank you. Mike Palmer lives in the Bay Area in Berkeley, and he also has been giving me some tips and gave us a good place to run and hike in Berkeley, which we did yesterday. Also like to thank David Meyer and Tamara Birdsall. We stayed with them. David is actually the brother of my brother-in-law, and we stayed with them last night in Berkeley, so thank you to them. If you have any questions about the training camp or Western States, send me an email, chemsmith1@gmail.com, or go to Facebook. Runsmith Enterprises is the group, or you can find me on Facebook and ask me a question. I'll try to respond, but also I can also use it for maybe the next podcast. I can talk about some things if you have any questions, so please do that. In fact, you can, on top of that, you could also send me an MP3, which I've been mentioning. So send me an MP3 audio comment. I'll play it on the show and respond right there. So feel free to do that. If you do that, try to make it a file that's about 5 minutes long or less. Try not to go too long on that. And finally, I haven't asked this yet, but please go to iTunes and leave a rating or a review. I've got very few, and that would really help the podcast. So please, please, please go to iTunes, leave a rating or a review. And again, this is, you can find information about me at runsmith.net. You can donate at patreon.com/runsmith. And at the website, you can find out about my coaching services and other contact information. So I know this was kind of rambling. I apologize for that, but I just wanted to get it out before Western States. Hopefully give you some idea of what the whole training camp is like. Go do it. It was a blast. I would do it again if I could. It was absolutely fantastic. So there you go. This is Topics in Endurance Sports, signing out. Have a fun workout.